She wrote a book about her life. It is an amazing, sad, angering, frightening, true story. It's her story. And then it was released, and thus began the tale of two titles. Hello, everyone. I'm Pamela Brewer, welcoming you to this edition of Mind Talk. Very happy to introduce you to today's guest, Esther Lawson. She is speaking to us from the United Kingdom about her life, her book, and then her retitled book. Esther, welcome to Mind Talk.
Yes, hello. Thank you.
Now, Esther, you heard me describe your book as having one title and then another title. What's going on?
Well, what's happened is the original book that I wrote, which was called Wagamata, which is the spine of the book, and that is what inspired me to write it, had to be changed for the politically correct title called What's the Matter? The British media would not accept the title of Wagamata because they said it was too offensive to have put before the public. And so therefore I was forced to change the title. Libraries refused to stop my book.
Wow.
And the politically correct media ran scared from the truth.
Okay, so I got to go back. As you know, I am talking to you from the United States. So when I hear that you had a title of Wagamata, I'm not sure what that means. What does that mean? Let our listeners know what that means, and then explain what the deal is. I mean, I've kind of it just seems so odd that they would make you change the title.
Well, Wagamata is the words that was used by the racist bullies after they had beaten me up and been calling me names and I'd be crying. Instead of saying, what's the matter, they would change it into a racial word, into Wagamata, Wagamata.
And the word Wag was the racial slur that they were using to taunt you even further, it sounds like.
Yes, that was the racial word that they used to taunt me even further. And it actually came from the jam jar. They used to have a gollywog on the jam jar. And so they used to call you gollywog, get off, get back on your jam jar. And then, as I said, the words what's the matter was then changed to Wagamata.
All right, explain to us what gollywog means.
Gollywog is a child's toy, which was black in colour, and the racial abuse people turned that round to use it against people of colour, black people, so then they was called the gollywog.
I see.
And then they then shortened it to wog, and then Wagamata instead of what's the matter.
Got it. So you wrote the book. It was titled Wagamata. We talked about it here on Mind Talk. We'll talk more about what actually your story is in a moment, but you say that the libraries refused to carry it, the British press refused to promote it, but it was a true story. It's a word that is that certainly the Brits are fully aware of. I'm puzzled.
Yes, they are fully aware of it, but at the end of the day, they wish to appear squeaky clean that these kind of things did not go on in the country. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to face it, and they certainly don't want us bringing it to the forefront of the things that we had to suffer. And at the time, it was put up and shut up, and even to this present day, it is put up and shut up. And because I'm speaking out and giving my experiences of what I was put through as a child of mixed parentage, They don't want the public to know about it. They want to appear as squeaky clean. They're in denial of it.
And when you say they, you're literally talking about the libraries, the media, the country essentially
British
as a whole.
Media, the British media, the press, the televisions. I sent my book off to the press, televisions, and magazines. Not one single organization would even reply to the request on, you know, this is my story. I finally wrote it. I want my voice to be heard. I want people to know what we went through. And also, I wanted to portray that whatever they did to us, we were still strong to overcome it and carry on with our lives with no bitterness towards anybody.
And when you say us, you are referring to yourself and other people of color growing up in the UK or living in the UK.
Yes, and there's plenty of people that went through exactly the same as myself, but they're too afraid to talk about it and put it in the public. And when you do, you get attacked by the public that say that we have got chips on our shoulders. If it happened, it's been, it's gone. Get over it.
Yeah, get over it sounds really familiar. It happened in the past. It's not happening to you. We didn't do it. We don't want to hear about it. Get over it. That sounds really familiar.
Yes.
So let's talk a bit about some of the experiences that, you know, I'm about to say exposed in your book, but exposed to whom? Because the people in your land know that what you experienced was typical for people of color.
Yes, I believe that they're ashamed. They're ashamed of what happened and what we were subjected to. And because of that, you know, they don't want anybody to know about it. It's as if it is our history. It's my history as well. And, you know, they tried to erase us in the beginning and still trying to erase our history today.
You said in, well, as we're talking about the book today, so we're no longer talking about Waga Matter, we're talking about What's the Matter.
Yes, the politically corrected version.
I have to tell you that I hear your annoyance. I hear your anger. And it's,
I felt insignificant as a child growing up in the hostile, aggressive, brutally racist United Kingdom, and I feel insignificant now. They've transported me back to the 1960s.
They've taken away your history as you, they've tried to take away your history as you experienced it.
Yeah.
You say in your book that the Lincolnshire is the UK's most racist county. Tell us a little bit about them and what your experience was in Lincolnshire.
My experiences in Lincolnshire was pretty shocking. And at the time that I was living there, there was not many people of mixed parentage, people of colour. And even when they first had a Chinese shop that wanted to open up a restaurant there, there was a big, massive debate that they didn't want any kind of foreign restaurants to open in their in their county. But of course, eventually, you know, they did. And I was told this myself from the actual owner of the Chinese shop. But as for me and my mother, when she used to come up and stay with me, And we'd go into the shops. We were given filthy, dirty looks. They didn't speak to us. They didn't smile at us. And what they would do is when we went up to the counter and bought something, they would not place the change in my mother's hands. They put it on the counter. But yet everybody else, they were placing the change in the hand. There was another experience when we was out in the shops and we was waiting in the queue, you know, to be able to pay for the goods that we wanted. And when it was our turn to get to the checkout, the lady totally ignored us and looked behind us and served the person behind us. And I thought, oh, well, that's strange. So anyway, and I said, excuse me, we have been waiting in the queue and you should be serving us next, not someone behind. She did not even say a word to us and carried on serving the next customer. And with that, me and my mum decided it's best that we leave the shop. Obviously, you know, we're not entitled to the same services as anybody else.
It sounds so familiar to experiences here in the United States, that it's, you know, it's kind of eerie, but kind of not, because it's, you know, I get it. I completely get it. Your mom now was from Kenya, and your dad was from the UK?
Yes.
And your dad met your mom while he was in service, brought her back home to the UK. And I noticed that you indicate in What's the Matter? Waga Matter? So I guess we're calling it What's the Matter. All right. That dad never wanted to have his picture and would not allow his picture to be taken with his wife, your mom, or his biracial children.
That's correct. There's not one single picture. And every time that when my grandmother came down and said, right, come then, let's take a family picture, he would never ever have a family picture taken with any of us, my mum or his children. There is absolutely not one single photograph of my father with us as children or with my mother. And my mother did tell me, even when she got married out in Kenya, which was a quick rush job, and she didn't want to marry him, not even a photograph was taken then. No pictures, no connection to his family.
So he did notice that your mother was Kenyan and a woman of color, and she was fine to have sex with, but not to acknowledge openly.
Yes.
And tell us about your dad. He sounds, as you've described him, quite abusive.
He was a very abusive man, a very uncaring man, a very selfish man, and also a severe alcoholic. Not a very nice person to know. We was always terrified of him. And, you know, when we did see him, it would be when he was drunk or beating my mother up and all those kind of things. He was a nasty, nasty man.
How many siblings do you have?
I'm the eldest, and I have three sisters. Unfortunately, one has passed away, 46 years old from cancer, so I've now got two sisters left.
Okay.
But my mum had seven children in total, two that she had twins that she was carrying, and then my father brutally chucked her out of the front door and she landed on her stomach, and then that's started self-terminating of the pregnancy. But he called the doctors. She couldn't say what had happened, and she was all right for a week or so, and then she went into labour and had the children. One died internally, one lived for a couple of days.
Oh.
And that was all because of what he'd done to my mother.
So he essentially killed two of his children.
Yes.
You said that your mother couldn't talk. Is that because she was literally speechless, or was she not permitted to speak by your father?
Well, she was terrified of him.
Okay.
And, the only things is just the small, quiet things, the same as any person who's under brutal, severe control.
Sure.
But, as the years went by and she got older, she did start getting stronger and stronger. And then, of course, she had me there helping her. That's how she grew up with us, really.
She was so young, but she was 17, I think, when your dad married her.
16.
16.
16, she had me, yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, you all kind of grew up together. Give us a thumbnail sketch of an experience that you had as a little one growing up, just going to school and what that was like.
Oh, going to school. Well, there was going to school when I was 4 years old. My mother was unable to take me to school personally because she had my other sisters to look after. She didn't have any friends that could just keep an eye on the kids so she could take me to school. So starting school at 4 years old was the most terrifying experience I ever experienced because I had to cut through this very, very old graveyard with these 14th century gravestones going through. So I remember as a child building myself up mentally to run through as quickly as I could because I was so terrified. But the school that I was at, which was a one room school, which was built in 1825, I think, which was called the Old Schoolhouse, was a fabulous school. The teachers was nice, the children was nice, but when I started a different school from the age of five, right up till the age of 16, where I experienced the most horrendous abuse anyone could experience.
It sounds like almost from birth, you were catapulted into the world of being an adult.
Yes. Yes. And a lot of people find it hard that I can remember a lot of things from such a young age. And I put that down to, the trauma of everything, and all the memories have actually been physically scorched into my mind, and that's why I can remember virtually everything that from three right up until 16.
And the memories are, as I was reading, What's the Matter? The memories are so traumatizing. They are indeed so searing that it's easy to imagine that you would remember them, and yet how unfortunate that you would remember them. Esther, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we will continue our conversation right here. We'll pick up actually with your 8-year-old time of crime, as it were. We'll be right back. Esther, at the age of eight years old, you were charged with 56 crimes.
Yes.
That's pretty amazing. What were some of the crimes you were charged with at the age of eight?
I was charged with every single one.
What did they charge you with?
Every single one, and they were, well, when I look at it now, I find it absolutely unbelievable. There were things like stole a piece of fruit. They didn't say what fruit it was. It just says stole a piece of fruit on the 1st of, and I'll just give an example, the 1st of April to the 30th of April. So in between that time, I stole a piece of fruit. They also had me, apparently I stole somebody's purse between the 16th to the 28th of 1 month, and also I broke into to somewhere at the same time, and also I broke into a car and stole a packet of cigarettes all at the same time in the same day.
So you were in three places. You were in three places at one time.
Yeah.
Committing.
The distance between those places was like 20 miles of each of them. So I don't know how I managed to be in those places at the same time with a radius of 20 miles in between. Yeah, absolutely pathetic. But at the end of the day, you know, I was, well, I was going to say mixed race, but they don't like to use the word mixed race over here, so we now have to say mixed heritage.
You're not allowed to say mixed race?
No, it's not recognized anymore. It's mixed heritage.
Well, you can be of mixed heritage and still appear to be the same race. So it's really not accurate in many cases.
No.
Okay, so no more mixed race and no more Wonga matter.
Absolutely, definitely no Wonga matter. The radio stations where I did the BBC, you know, and I'm not going to be afraid to say who they are. Yes, the BBC. BBC radios would not even say the word Wagga matter. They don't like it. It's offensive, and they're not prepared to say the word. I can say the word, but they certainly are not going to. And that's why, you know, we're back to the word, the title that they feel comfortable with. What's the matter? And as far as I'm concerned, that is detracting away from my book of truth, and What's the Matter certainly has got no comparison to the actual words used, Wagga Matter.
So the ways in which you were treated are offensive to them, but it's your truth, but they don't want to hear it. That's what it boils down to.
Yeah. They don't care. They're not interested. They don't want to know.
What about the violence that... Let me interrupt myself and go back to the crime spree that you engaged in at the age of eight years old, being in several places at the same time. So these were actual charges that were lodged against you by the police, or...
Yeah, and put into court, yes. And in my book, I have actually got the pages of all the actual crimes that was written down with dates and times, and also a copy of the court date. And they were very naughty because they say these crimes were committed when I was 8 years old, but they left it until I got to 9 years old and then put it into court. But then they changed the court date because I was soon coming up to be 10 years old. And at the age of 10 years old, then you are deemed as responsible for any criminal activities. So they then held on to those to wait until I was closer to 10. But at the end of the day, it was like 2 months to go and I would be 10 years old. So they thought maybe they could still use it then. But those 56 offences, they held on to for a couple of years before they used them, which is just unbelievable and certainly would not be allowed in this day and age.
And they, the they that you refer to, the police, the court system, all of the above, none of the above?
It was all, yes, it all went, the police did the charges and the police put it in court.
Okay, okay. And so the police held on
to
it. Okay.
Court.
And so at the age of 10, you had then been a criminal for 2 years. Then what happened?
Well, they couldn't. it's most bizarre. 10 years old, they believe that you are responsible for any criminal activity. That's what they believe. But any criminal activities, even if I did do them, which I didn't, from the age of 7, 8, 9, there's nothing they can do about it because I'm a child and not responsible for my actions because you just don't know what you're doing. But they held on to those till I was close to 10 years old to try and get me prosecuted for those 56 crimes.
And if
so
you had...
what they did and put me into court was against the law anyway because
okay.
I was under the age of criminal responsibility.
Gotcha. And if they had, in fact, been able to effect a prosecution of these one or all of these 56 crimes, what would have been your punishment?
I would have been sent to an approved school.
Okay. And an approved school
like a
doesn't...
child sort of prison type thing, but not
okay.
in a prison environment.
Okay.
But it would be an approved school, Borstal, which doesn't exist now in our country.
Okay.
Very nasty place.
Well, you know, the places that you did go to sound like they were pretty nasty places.
Yeah. I mean, I still... can't believe you. Even up till today, I find it flabbergasting that, you know, they actually arrested an 8-year-old child with no parents, no appropriate adult, taken into the police station and fingerprinted. And I remember it as if it was yesterday, and all the sticky residue that is stuck on your fingers from having to do the fingerprinting and trying to wash it off, and it really, really is very, very difficult to come off. I mean, they should not have been allowed to have done that, but they did.
And you didn't even know what was going on.
Because I don't count. People of colour, people of mixed heritage, mixed race, don't count for anything.
Is that still true today?
Well, yes, of course it is. Of course it is. But things are happening, and I have got to mention this, the Windrush people. I don't know if you've heard it through the media, of all the people that came over to England that was invited by the United Kingdom to come over and help build our country up because, you know, from the war and all that kind of stuff. So they had all these people come from Jamaica and all the colonies, you know, come, they are, we're open you with welcome you with open arms, come and build our country for us. And then a few months ago the government was saying, well, they haven't got their papers, so they're going back, irrespective that they've lived here 50, 60 odd years and paid their taxes and helped build the country up. So there's a big scandal about that. But now, you know, they seem to we do accept and we are grateful that they came, and no, they shouldn't be kicked out of our country. So there's quite a lot of big changes going on within the United Kingdom now as far as people of colour and different cultures.
You're saying that they were called the Windrush people?
Yes, the Windrush people that came over in the boats from all the different British colonies, coloured people. And from the Windrush people coming over to our country and the English people not liking it, that's where it all started from, you know, 1940s, 1950s, the 1960s, where, you know, they've come over to help the country and to better their lives, and they're all having the doors slammed in their faces where they couldn't even take board and lodging. No blacks here. We don't take them in, but, you know, they're happy to have them here to help build the country up.
So they came by invitation. They were lied to. That invitation included lies, and then as they performed the work that they were asked to perform, still not welcomed. Does sound familiar.
Still not welcome.
Yeah.
And then only a few months ago, the government are saying, well, that they've got to produce their papers to see if they've still got a right to stay in this country. And a lot of them can't find the papers. And so the United Kingdom started kicking some of them out and refusing them their healthcare to NHS healthcare. It was shocking, appalling. But the government has now changed tactics and, have recognised the Windrush people and are praising them for it, and have now created a memorial for the Windrush people coming into this country.
That's...
They've only just started to recognise them now.
You know, I almost don't even know what to say, because it's so ludicrous and so shameful and so painful to the people who have lived these lives.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's caused a lot of pain and suffering to these Windrush people that, you know, have lived it, as I said, 50, 60 years, worked hard, paid their taxes, got themselves a better life, you know, their own homes, had their children, and so forth, and to be kicked in the teeth that way by the government. But now there was an uproar about it, everything's been changed, and, they're recognising that these people did come over here and help us, and we should be grateful to them, not trying to throw them out.
Right.
A lot of changes happening over here, and for the good as well.
I want to go back just for a moment to your childhood, because as you were talking about the experiences of the Windrush people, it brought me back again. You were born there, lived there. You are a native of your country, and you, as a child, you were literally stoned by other children?
Yes, I was, which hit me on the head, knocked me out, and I've woken up, and, you know, there's a doctor there putting some stuff on my head with a big, massive-sized lump there, and, that's a very, very painful memory for me.
You were stoned, you were kicked, you were beaten, you were terrified. Did it...
Spat at everything.
Everything. And there were many times that you didn't tell your mom because you didn't want her to be scared.
Yeah, I didn't want to cause any pain and upset to her, because at the end of the day, that would create a fear for her, where, you know, she will be blaming herself, but she can't even protect her children, you know, when I didn't want her to be blaming herself.
What happened with your father? At some point, he was out of the mix.
He was what? Sorry?
At some point, your mother was no longer married to your father. What happened?
Well, eventually, after she managed to sort of gain some strength, she said, no, you know, I don't want this marriage anymore. And then he disappeared, and he was gone for a long time. And then my mum would have debt collectors banging on the door, saying that she's got to pay for this, that, and the other, and all these suits and things like that. And she said, well, I didn't buy it. It's, you know, he's bought it. But they were trying to sort of put pressure on her that way to pay for his debts, but she didn't. And then eventually she got her divorce. And the court said to her that she was living with an animal. He was not fit to even live with another human being. That's how bad it was.
It sounds like it was just horrendous. Your mother at ultimately remarried, yes?
Yes.
And
to my stepfather. And even though, you know, with my father never being around, always being in and out of prison or doing armed robberies and in prison himself, my stepfather wanted to adopt all four of us as his own, and he tried to put in for the adoption, and they refused it because my father was dead against it, even though he had nothing to do with us and didn't want anything to do with us.
So it sounds like he was just a kind of an evil guy all the way around, through and through.
Yes, he was.
But your mother found love and safety with her new husband, yes?
Yes. And, you know, he's my dad in every sense of the word. He was our saviour. But he also started receiving abuse that he was with a black woman. So he actually had abuse thrown at him. But he just lifted his head up high and just ignored it. He didn't let it bother him in any way, shape or form.
That takes a lot of courage.
Yeah.
And it's good
to... They've been married for over 40-something years.
Married for 40-something years. Impressive.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break. And actually, we're not going to take a break. I take that back. Your stepfather, sounds like he was white as well?
Yes, he was.
Okay. But his relationship with you and your siblings... warm, loving, and supportive.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
He was a normal father.
The kind of father that you had a right to have from the very beginning.
Yes.
Yes. We're going
to
take
it. To this present day.
He still lives to this present day?
I'm still the same.
Wonderful.
Today. Still dad today in every sense of the word.
Wonderful. Wonderful. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'd like to focus more on the world that you live in today. Folks, my name is Pamela Brewer. I'm having a conversation with Esther Lawson, who comes to us from Great Britain, and she is the author of Waga Matter that has now been retitled What's the Matter? Please don't go away. We'll be right back. Esther, the world in which you live today, you are living in London, yes?
In Stoke-on-Trent now.
Okay, and actually that was an area that you said was lovely, I think.
Absolutely, very, and we're multicultural county here. Stoke-on-Trent, Staffordshire, where all the Staffordshire pottery comes from. And yes, the people are absolutely lovely. And, you know, everybody gets on with everybody.
And tell us a little bit more about your life today. Married, single, children, no children?
No, I'm single, divorced now. I've got two grown-up sons, and I've got a granddaughter. But now I suffer with terrible ill health and disabilities and things like that. But I remember, I don't know if I can take you back, when I first had an interview with you on Mind Talk, and you asked me an important question. And you asked me, do I ever think that change will ever come about? And I adamantly said to you, no, I do not believe racism, racial abuse, and all the things against people of different cultures would change. And I now have to say, and I'm happy to be able to say that, that I do believe that change is going to come about in the United Kingdom.
And why do you believe that? What caused the change?
What caused the change is the monarchy. The monarchy has created change that is going to change the future, because the monarchy has accepted mixed heritage, mixed race into the royal family now. And when Prince Harry got married to Meghan Markle, and the wedding, I don't know if you saw the wedding, the actual wedding was absolutely fabulous, fantastic. And I couldn't believe that I was seeing what I was seeing. I never thought I would see anything like that in my lifetime. But the whole of the wedding was totally multicultural wedding, and it was fabulous. And that's where I say change is going to happen, because the monarchy is leading the way.
Something you never thought you would see, and indeed you are now seeing it and living through it. Have you noticed any tiny changes post the wedding? Have you noticed anything yet that's different and that's better?
Well, yes, I have. And as I said before, we've now had the controversy over the Windrush people.
Okay.
But since the marriage of Prince Harry to Meghan Markle, as I said to you before, the government are not going to be throwing these people out of the country.
Okay.
They're going to allow them to stay here. They're thanking them from the bottom of their hearts for everything that they've done, and even set up a memorial for when the Windrush people first landed in the United Kingdom. And okay, I believe this has come about because of the monarchy lovingly accepting mixed heritage into the royal bloodline.
What, as you look at what's happening in your homeland now, and I'm sure that you have some sense of what's going on in America these days, what do you think?
Yes.
What do you think about what's going on here in the United States?
Well, I think it's absolutely horrendous. And I absolutely do not believe that there is going to be any kind of change in America. I do believe that it's going to get worse. And as far as I'm concerned, it's a simmering kettle ready to blow. With deadly consequences.
With deadly consequences.
Yeah. And there's going to be lives at stake. You know, I do keep an eye on what's going on in America, and it is getting worse. It's going to be a race war.
You hear my sigh.
Yeah. It's coming. It's there. You see it every day. And, you know, I don't even know if I can say this, but at the end of the day, everybody should be free to say what they think and they believe. There's just too much institutional racism in bodies of power.
Well, that does unfortunately seem to be the case. Racism, sexism, you name it. Very much.
Yeah.
Tell us about your children. You have two adult children. How are their lives different from what your life was like growing up?
Well, my eldest son, he won't even read the book.
Really?
He won't read the book, he said, because from the little bits that he does know, he said it's just far too upsetting and it makes him feel extremely angry.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with my two boys, and my eldest son is blonde hair, blue eyes. My youngest son is brown hair, brown eyes, and is of coloured skin. So the funny thing, well, it's not funny, but I was exposed to both sides of racism. Now, my eldest son, the blonde haired, blue eyes, he would be picked on by people of coloured skin, should I say. I'm not
okay.
going to say which culture.
Okay.
But he was being beaten up for being white.
Mm-hmm.
And my youngest son, who is dark skinned and of colour, was being picked on by the white people for his colour. So I was having complaints coming from my eldest son that he was being beaten up by the a different culture, and then I was having my youngest son, he was being beaten up and racist abuse and all of that from another culture. So that showed me then that it was happening from both sides then.
Yeah. And you mentioned your son, your older son, blonde hair, blue eyes, your younger son, dark hair, dark eyes.
Dark complexion.
And
they were not recognized as brothers, even though they are full brothers with the same parents. They don't recognize them. They say, well, no, you can't be brothers because, you know, he's that color and you're that color. And we don't believe that she's your mum because she's dark and you're white, so you must have been adopted or something. So, you know, that kind of stuff.
So it continues.
Yeah.
How do you cope with literally getting it from both ends, as far as, you know, from your children's lens? How are you coping with it?
Yeah, it was upsetting. It was very stressful and traumatizing as well, because at the end of the day I was sort of like trying to defend both of my boys, you know, my son with the white skin and my son with the dark skin, and, you know, I'm saying, well, you know, you should be proud of what you are and you shouldn't rise to it and, you know, just ignore it. I was saying the same thing to both of them.
And, you know, it's as you very well know, ignoring it is not something that's easy to do.
Well, of course you can ignore it, but at the end of the day, it still doesn't hurt the mental damage.
Right.
That you know, you experience, and then you start to internalize it and things like that. But you know, I tried my hardest for my boys not to internalize it and not to be bitter. And, you know, just to put it down to, you know, they're just ignorant people. And, you know, the more you ignore it, you know, the better off you're going to be, you know, when you become men. You know, I didn't want them to do any kind of retaliation or anything like that. I mean, for my youngest son, you know, it got that bad where he was attacked in school and he was hit with a hammer.
Oh, my.
Because of the colour of his skin, and this was just, you know, that could not be ignored. So, you know, I had to go to the school and you know, make full complaints, and you know, this is not acceptable and it's not going to be tolerated. So the school was then left to deal with that, and the child was removed from the school, but no police was involved.
Interesting.
You know, that's an assault with a hammer, but I don't understand what planet I was on at the time, because I should have involved the police, you know, because that was an assault with an offensive weapon, a hammer, and my son had a massive bruise on his back from it. But I think I didn't do anything about it, and as I said to you, I didn't know what planet I was in. I think I must have been catapulted back to my past.
Of course.
Where you just don't say anything.
Because as you were growing up, you realized that saying, first of all, if you said something to the quote-unquote authorities, it wouldn't matter.
Yeah.
And if you said something
to... You weren't listened to. You were ignored. Mm. So that's the only reasons I can think why I didn't take it any further. You know, talking about it now, you know, that's just unacceptable. He was physically hit with a hammer at school, which caused bruising to his back, and I did nothing except go to the school and you know, this is not acceptable, but I still did nothing. I should have reported it to the police, but I didn't.
But, you know, the school should have reported it to the police.
They didn't.
Yeah, well, they were too busy at some point, and as we've talked about, the police were so busy arresting mixed-race 8-year-olds that I guess going beyond that was kind of difficult for them.
Yeah.
You know,
But even today, and you know, just taking you back slightly when you said, you know, about the USA, and I said about the institutional racism, that is very, very strong here, especially with our police, exactly the same as police in the USA. If you're white, you get protected. If you're not, you're the one that's done wrong, and you're the one that's going to get slammed the hardest.
And in fact, in school, when you would make good grades, they would accuse you of cheating.
Yeah, yeah. I was cheating, and people of colour, black people, we have not got the brain capacity to have any kind of high intellect.
What was their response when America had a black president?
Well, I thought it was absolutely fantastic, and I didn't really hear that much. I don't believe there was really sort of that much that was said.
Sure.
At having a black president. But today, even though I said I do believe there's going to be change in the future, and that is going to be in the future, I can't ever see us having a black prime minister.
Interesting. Throughout all that you went through, where it really did seem like fear and loneliness were your constant companions, you had an amazing voice. And in fact, you sang for a bit. We've just got a few moments left, but if you could just give us a tiny, tiny sketch of your singing life.
Absolutely fantastic. Different world. In the music world, it didn't make any difference, you know, what colour you were. It was your voice that I was interested in. Fantastic people. Just a completely different world. And I absolutely enjoyed it. But I went into it because I needed to prove that I could be accepted.
Mm.
And I was accepted. And I went as far as I wanted to go and then stopped. Because I never did it to become some famous singer.
Uh-huh.
I did it to obtain acceptance. And, you know, I had all these people flocking at the feet. And the most amazing thing is the children that had grown up, the males, and the one that threw the stone at my head was there at my feet, jollying me on, yeah, whistling. He didn't even recognize who I was.
Amazing.
But I recognized him.
Of course you did. We live in an amazing place, do we not?
We do.
More to be said about that at another time. Esther, I'm so appreciative of your letting me know about the change in your title. That I was certainly shocked when you first let me know that Waga Matter was now What's the Matter. But I am grateful to once again have had the time to talk with you today. Is there a website for the book or a way that people can be in touch with you if they'd like to know more about what you're doing?
At this moment in time, the website is actually being built, so it's not available yet, but it will be, and it will just come under the name of Esther Lawson,
okay.
What's the Matter, and people will be able to find me that way.
Terrific, and that's Esther Lawson, What's the Matter.
Yeah.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Esther, thank you again so much for your time and for what you're doing and for your continuing to have the courage to speak out.
Thank you, Pamela. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. And folks, thank you for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service, and it is not intended to replace any work that you might choose to do with a mental health, medical health, or other professional. You can listen to Mind Talk on demand by going to myndtalk.org. That's, again, myndtalk.org. You can download the Mind Talk app from your iTunes or Google Play Store. We would love to know where in the world you are as you're listening today, so do send an email to me at Pamela, P-A-M-E-L-A, at mindtalk.org. And remember always, folks, if it's unacceptable, then that's what it is. Unacceptable. You take care.